It's Sunday, and the stars have aligned to bring us together to share this audio experience that we have every week, our little appointment together where I share my madness with you, and well, sometimes you send me emails and tweets, and it's all very lovely. I suppose we ought to get started. It should be noted that I'm lonely when I look at you. Not only then, it's not exclusive, but you make me feel so... nope. Rhyming feelings with colours, clicking clichés, making myself sick of being infected with your affection, my real selfish screaming, or my tantrums internally yearning every time I look at you. Considering I spend most of my time writing romantic things, I think the thing that a lot of people find surprising about me is that I do not particularly enjoy being romantic. Like, in the sense of, I do not particularly enjoy sort of feeling very out of control of myself and that aspect of romance and being in love with someone, because I gotta control the narrative. I gotta be, I'm the boss, you know? And that, I just, you know, it's scary and it's weird and I don't like it. But it just happens because I like to think I'm in control of myself. But that's not true, because, I mean, well, I have several books and, you know, several podcast episodes and all these different things I've shared with you that are very much proof that I am not, because, oh my God, you know, you put me sort of within a vague proximity of someone that I have even the smallest amount of feelings for, and oh, oops, guess who's going crazy? It's me. But I started to have a little fun with acknowledging my reluctance, you know. I do have a tendency of, you know, sort of rhyming feelings with colours. I have done that a few times. Again, I talked about this last week with the flowers and lesbians, but I'm very willing to admit that. And I'm willing to kind of, you know, laugh at myself, you know, because life is long and hard, you know, we don't have to be so serious all the time. And frankly, I think anyone who creates things and can't sort of enjoy a little moment of sort of self-awareness is probably a bit insecure, maybe. Oh God, I'm being shady again. Oh no. See, again, this is where I need a co-host. I need someone to say to me, go, is this really a correct thing to do? But I don't. I don't have that. But it's fine. It's okay. I woke up this morning after having a dream about that person, and I was really angry with them because of the dream. I think I was also kind of angry with them for something that happened, like, before. So I was like not really talking to them and kind of being a bit of a brat and whatever. But then after I woke up, it's like I was angry with them because of what happened before and also because of what happened in the dream. But I was like, I kind of really want them to, like, be here right now.
because they always make me feel better. So it's, you know, it's complicated when, you know, when the person that, you know, you're mad at and you're like, oh, I, like, hate you now, whatever, is also kind of your comfort blanket, you know? Life is hard.
I remember dressing as a different girl each day because you said you loved me, but you didn't download me as I was, preferring to project endless expansion packs onto my frightened form. I have been each girl on your grimy, gory screen, playing your pet virgin so well that I look into the mirror and it just looks like your laptop. Despite insisting that you love me, you just aimed a stream of white lightning at my tear-stained face. I called that the never-ending sacrifice, which is actually, because where it gets complicated, in Star Trek, it is the name of a book within the Star Trek universe, in Cardassian culture, because Cardassians are my favourites from Star Trek. But they then actually released a real life, as in our universe, book called The Neverending Sacrifice, which was about kind of a generation of a Cardassian family. And it was wonderful. I loved it. I have always thought that the name The Neverending Sacrifice is very beautiful. And so I wanted to title that poem that. Because in a way it kind of summed up that situation that I was writing about for me. It was a never-ending sacrifice in that I always had to keep compromising who I was and doing things I didn't want to do and being unhappy to make him happy. And he never did anything like that for me. Like, girl. He is very lucky that I had, like, minus levels of self-esteem at the time, because anyways, so it felt like a never-ending sacrifice because it just went on and on and on. I was always having to give more. I was always having to be more. And it just never ended. You know, and it got to a point where I was just like, who even am I at this point? And now I can look back and I can say, you know what, it's okay because we got back to who we are and we became better. So who really won? Me, obviously I did. We fell in love on the backseat of a bus. 2 a.m. to go on an adventure, trying to kiss to the sound of the Smiths, undeterred by persistent potholes, mad about doing us a mischief. We were convinced that we were the only two in the world, the only two who had heard those songs. The only two who had taken that bus to Tesco under the watchful eye of the dark sky and at the demand of our hunger. You were hungry for me, feasting on my flushed cheeks, covering them with candy kisses, as I surveyed the sweet aisle, searching for nothing in particular, finding myself being guided from shelf to shelf by yourself and the dominant streak that you pretend you don't have to your feminist friends at momentum meetings. I felt, as I always do with you, expensive for all your faults, all the holes I could poke in our fantasy of true 2 in the morning Tesco love. When I was with you, I was a million-dollar Marilyn Monroe, cradled in your arms at the mercy of your right hand while your left thrills a torn-up paperback. I actually go to the shops late at night now a lot, just because it's less busy and it's just so much easier. But when I was young, and kind of the time that that was written about, was in my first year of uni, and I was still getting used to not being in the country anymore and being in a city and having things like 24-hour buses and 24-hour shops. It was all very new to me. And so this guy that I was, I don't know if you could call it, we were seeing each other, God, I don't know. Anyways, so he texted me and he said, do you want to hang out? And I was like, it's late at night, what are you talking about? And he was like, well, just come to the train station by yours, and there's a bus from there to mine. I will get the bus over to you, and then we can go to the shops and get food and then hang out or whatever. And I was like, okay. You know, I was kind of afraid of going out late at night, but I was also kind of curious. So I went and I met him, and then we got on this bus at night, I know, right? And we got the bus down to this Tesco. And when we were on the bus, right, we sat right up at the back, like we were super cool. And he was playing music out of his phone. And I normally hate when people do that, but I, for some reason, didn't mind. And he was sat reading his book and cuddling up to me and stuff. And we, you know, and we were taking photos and kissing. And it was very that, you know. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is like super magical. I mean, as it all turns out, that magic was very temporary, but it was nice at the time. You know, it was nice while it lasted. And I think, you know, perhaps it's a mistake, but that's kind of how I choose to remember that. You know, smiling and being close to each other and just being happy, rather than the quite heated arguments we had later on over the stupidest things normally. But I think that night on the bus was very special. Don't go. That's vague, non-committal enough to be comfortable, but I hope you'll see through it all and understand that when I'm with you, I am home. I don't know you, that's the truth. Maybe it makes this confusing, but I hope that we'll have more summer days, parading and praising each other, here, in our home. I miss them. That's strange to say, but it's true, and I'll miss you. Though all of you are mysteries to me. We have lost so much, threatened by more loss every day. So please, come home and celebrate your life. Please don't go. That's a lot to ask. It might not even be something you can control. But when you bleed, I am reeling, my heart tied in knots, because we are a part of each other's pictures, thrown together because people couldn't understand us, but we built ourselves a home. I love you. That's all I have to offer you. But if you take it or if you don't, I will fight for you. Just make sure you come home every now and again so we can spend the summer days just living. Celebrate your life. Celebrate what we have here built through the years by those we lost and those we have yet to meet. Celebrate your life with me at home. I don't know if it's actually always been like this and I've just been sort of blissfully unaware. But it feels like everyone's really coming for the LGBT community this Pride Month. Like, what the fuck? Like, firstly, we've got people legitimately holding anti-LGBT protests, like, in public, outside of schools and shit. You know, in various spots across the country. Then there are people actually in our government, despite it being against government policy, agreeing with these protests and saying that it's fine. Right? Now, I guess that kind of makes sense because it's a conservative government, but just wait. Then on the other side, in the opposition, the allegedly pro-equality, left-leaning Progressive Labour Party, several of their members of parliament and some of their councillors are also in agreement with these blatantly homophobic protests. And then on top of that, there are these sort of this endless stream of anti-LGBT articles and opinion pieces in the newspaper. There was recently a horrific homophobic attack on two girls who were just trying to get home. You know, they were just going home and they were attacked by these boys after they refused to kiss for these boys' enjoyment so they could watch. Like, it just, I don't know, it's just all this happening at once. And it's like, you know what I mean? Just all kind of, you know, tumbling in. There's been a huge rise in anti-LGBT hate crimes. That was a, you know, horrible fucking thing to read about this week in the news. And I was just like, wow. Everybody's really coming for us, huh? Like, and for what? You know? Like, well, what the fuck did we ever do? But anyways, So I got to thinking, you know, about what community really means, you know? Because sometimes, you know, people kind of, I guess, look at the LGBT community and I don't know, they seem to think we have some kind of gay agenda. I think that's what they think we're doing all the time. I mean, actually, the truth is we're sort of all fighting amongst ourselves and things like that. But I think the things that have happened, you know, the protests, attacks in public, attacks from our own government. Thanks, guys. There's been a huge rise in trans people being attacked. You know, huge rises with gay and lesbian and bisexual people being assaulted in public. All these things are happening. And I just feel like we have to be there for each other. We have to hold on to each other a little bit tighter. And it's weird because, I mean, we don't all know each other. I do not know every single bisexual person in the world. It would make my life a lot easier if I did. I don't know every single, you know, LGBT person on the planet. But it's weird to explain, but like, I feel some kind of, like, sort of distant, faraway affection for all of them. It's like, oh, they're my people, you know? And watching so much suffering happening to our community, it's hard. And there are people in our community that suffer, and there are people in our community that unfortunately we lose. And so I think it's important to to be close and to be there for each other and to celebrate each other, you know, and to try and be each other's, you know, support through this, you know, because as we're seeing, you can't always rely on the people who claim to be your allies, you know. You know, the government, this is all very specific to the UK, by the way, sorry about that. But the British government started Pride Month by talking about how inclusive and progressive they are. And then, obviously, there were members of the cabinet, former members of the cabinet as well, speaking out about how they agree with these anti-LGBT protests. You know, there's a leadership contest going on at the moment with the Conservative Party, and the winner gets to be the Prime Minister. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but you know. And several of the candidates during the campaign for leadership, for some bizarre reason, have said a bunch of anti-LGBT things. And I'm like, I get that obviously a party leadership contest, most of the public can't vote, but are you telling me there's absolutely no LGBT people in your party who may be put off by that? And do you think that the rest of us who can't vote in this contest but will be able to vote at the next election, do you think we're all going to forget that? Okay. We won't, by the way. But, you know, so they start out by telling us how great, you know, they are in terms of being allies, and then they do all these things. The Home Office is completely open with their Pride flag logo on Twitter. They're completely open about the fact that they're deporting LGBT people still, right now, as I speak, to countries where they will be criminalized for who they are. They may even be killed. And the Home Office, with their fucking Pride logo on Twitter, is acting like that's fine and that's normal. And I'm like, I see. You know, this may be an unpopular opinion, but, and the Labour Party, which frankly, in my opinion, has got a lot of mileage out of the whole being allies to oppressed people thing. You know, the Labour Party have gotten a lot of positive press coverage. They've got, you know, a lot of support from, you know, sort of relying on saying, you know, we're progressive, we will fight for LGBT rights and things like that. And yet, you know, they say that their party's values are pro-equality, progressive, protecting the rights LGBT people have and enhancing those rights so that they are in line with everybody else. And yet, you know, the party leadership has nothing really to say about their MPs and councillors who are, again, supporting these anti-LGBT protests. You know, there are no consequences for these MPs and councillors who are going completely against the party's values. And I'm like, really? Oh no, Jeremy Corbyn. Oh no. I just feel, I mean, not to be a bitch about it, but it's the kind of thing you expect from the Conservatives, but you don't expect it from a party like Labour, who has spent a very long time telling us how progressive they are, how much they care about LGBT people, a party that have really utilised the brand of being sort of the champions of equality, especially when it comes to LGBT rights. You don't get to use that and then turn a blind eye when people within your party are displaying very obvious sort of anti-LGBT things. Like, it can't be both. You can't ignore that kind of thing, but then also call it out when other people do it. You have to be consistent, especially if you are going to use that support, you know? It's only fair. I don't think that people are asking for much. And I mean, to be fair, it's not everybody in the party. There are still a lot of people in the Labour Party who are very much sort of good allies. And there are a lot of LGBT people in the Labour Party as well. But for the leadership to just be completely silent on this isn't really good enough. And for there to be no consequences from veering so far off the party line is just wild to me. Like, you can expel Alistair Campbell in like 5 minutes for voting for the Lib Dems, but you can't do anything to this dude who has just publicly multiple times said that people standing outside primary schools protesting about LGBT people is fine. You can't do anything about that guy. Okay. Okay. All right then, sis. But anyway, I've gone in a bit of a ramble. But yeah, I just want to write something a little bit, you know, kind of positive and, you know, sort of like a hug with words for all my brothers and sisters in the big gay agenda, as as some people probably think of us. That's all for this week's episode, but I will see you again next week. You can find more of my work on my website, which is jenniferwan.com, and you can also find me on social media with the username Miss J Squared on Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Facebook. I also have a YouTube channel, but the links for everything are in the description, including links for live events I'm doing. The next performance I will be doing is on the 6th of July at the Leamington Poetry Festival in Leamington Spa. As Malcolm Tucker once said, it's never too soon to go to Leamington. I legitimately say that every time I talk about this event because, because I think about that quote all the time. Anyway. Thank you to my friend Amanda from Patreon. I love you a lot. You know that. I tell you all the time. If you are interested in supporting my Patreon or in one-off donations through PayPal and Ko-fi, the links for all of those are in the description. And with stuff like that, you get like extra content, free content, early content, all kinds of stuff. So if you want to check that out, you can. And I will see you next week. Good night, my love.